You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
During the Vietnam War, the CIA used Laos as a base for launching secret operations. After the 1975 communist takeover, hundreds of thousands of Laotians who had aided the Americans had to flee for fear of retribution. The fate of those refugees isn't something that gets much media attention, and that's why we're discussing it on today's first underreported segment. Joining me now are Thavi Sukh Prasavat. His family fled Laos in the 1970s. And also with me is Ellen Curis, a filmmaker who collaborated with Thavi Sukh on a documentary called Narakoon, which chronicles the Prasavat family's long and difficult journey from Laos to Brooklyn. It will be shown at the Brooklyn Academy of Music on Saturday, June 9th at noon as part of the Sundance Institute Festival at BAM. And I'm very pleased to welcome you both to the show. Thavi, you grew up in a time of war in Laos. What were your first memories?
My first memory of Laos growing up at that period is that that I only know that my father was a soldier. And, death and dying were all over the place. Bombing, explosion, it's become like paranormal. Every day that I see, you know, like body bags lying on the ground on the way to schools. And
were you living in the country or in the city?
I'm living in a very small city called Tha Kek, and that's the middle part of the country. And I have lots of terrifying memory growing up, especially bombing back then.
And yet it's a very beautiful country. The film reveals just how beautiful it is.
It's a very beautiful country in terms of if you're looking from only the outside, but internally it's of so much conflict politically as well as the war that's going on in the conflict between political party over many, many years that fighting who's going to rule Laos, you know. And from what I remember growing up, during the civil war in Laos, it's the war between the left wing and the right wings, and
was the Pathet Lao,
the
which Pathet was Laos. which was a supporter of the Viet Cong.
So the Pathet Laos considered as the left wing, who supported by the North Vietnamese, and the Royal Lao Army was supporting by the United States of America. That's where my father was one of the commander who working later on, that's how this become a Narakoon film, is part of how my father had been drawn into working for the SGU, which is supported by the American CIA.
Well, don't take us too far into the story yet.
Okay.
Alan, for listeners who are too young to have lived through the Vietnam War, maybe you can tell us more about what happened in Laos and give us some background about the CIA's activities there.
What most people don't realize is that the Vietnam War actually started in Laos, that back in the time of Kennedy, there was a coup in Laos. And all of a sudden, the entire world focused on what was going on in Laos because of where it's situated, because it's right in the middle of Southeast Asia, and it's bordered by Thailand, it's bordered by China, it's bordered by North Vietnam, South Vietnam, and Cambodia. And all of a sudden, everybody realized that if Laos fell, that all of Southeast Asia could fall to the communists.
So this was the beginning of the domino theory. Laos was the first domino?
Exactly. And most people don't realize that. And the fact that Kennedy, this was the first major crisis of his administration when he moved into office. It happened just months into the time that he took office. And all of a sudden, he and Khrushchev had to go to the table to talk about this tiny country called Laos. And so what ended up happening is that they ended up having they decided that they were going to call Laos neutral and that nobody could go into Laos, that it was neutral playing ground. But right after that, everybody ended up going into Laos in the back door.
And that's why all the bombings that Thavi was just telling us about?
Yeah, the bombings. Actually, Laos is the most bombed country in the world, even to this day. And people don't even know that. But what ended up happening is that they were being shelled by the North Vietnamese. The Americans bombed with the B-52 bombers and the T-28s up in the north of Laos because the Ho Chi Minh Trail ran through Laos. And the Ho Chi Minh Trail was the key for the North Vietnamese to send fuel and to send arms and ammunition to South Vietnam in order to fight the war.
Tavi, you mentioned earlier that there are these different groups vying for power in Laos. Is that because Laos is made up of so many different ethnic groups?
Yes, indeed. Laos was made of 68 ethnics and 42 dialects.
Wow, it's not a big country.
And based on the size of the country, you know, as known now, is only, about 5 million people at present time. Even though it was in the history, Laos was a very, very large kingdom, which even half of Thailand today belongs to Laos. And even part of the Vietnam today belongs to Laos, some in Cambodia as well as Burma and part of China also Laos too. Like, so when we're talking about Laos, it's very hard to pinpoint of how big is Laos. Basically, in the ancient time, Laos was very big. The Mekong flow to the heart of the land.
The Mekong, which Americans remember as being the source of the Mekong Delta, where so much of the fighting in the Vietnam War took place. Which ethnic group does your family belong to?
I came from the ethnics called Lowland Lao or Lao Lum.
And did they tend to have sided with the Royal Lao side of the war?
Yes, the most of the Lowland Lao they consider to be like the main ethnics of the Laotian who, part of the royal government.
When the CIA moved into Laos, basically what they did is they decided that they were going to fight a guerrilla war on the ground, because technically we weren't allowed to be on the ground in Laos, given that it was neutral, which is why the U.S. decided that they would fight the war in the air. So they sent in U.S. CIA personnel dressed in civilian clothes to run the war from the air. And Tavi's father was one of the people who was basically on the ground.
Also enlisted various ethnic groups to fight for the United States. The Hmong are probably the best known in this country.
Correct. The Hmong, which is a very distinct ethnic group from the ethnic group that Tavi belongs to, was located in the north of Laos near the Ho Chi Minh Trail. They were drawn into a mercenary army to fight for the CIA. And still to this day, they are experiencing a lot of trouble in Laos, because in Laos, the government is still very much a socialist government and doesn't want these people who work for the CIA back into the country. And they've been lingering in camps in Thailand. And the Thai also consider them illegal immigrants. So in Laos now, you know, there is still political upheaval. And the people like Tavi's father, who are here in the States today, they also are experiencing the long-range effects of the war. They are really veterans of the U.S. Army, and yet they're not considered veterans here. And also, they experience a lot of trouble coming here.
Now, did the Pathet Lao come to power in 1975? After Vietnam fell, after the United States left Vietnam, or was this a separate thing?
I think right after the fall of South Vietnam, which I not know exactly what year, like maybe 1973, I believe, mm-hmm. And right after that, and between the leaving and arriving of the Lao government, begin to have like coalition government, which they think like, why shouldn't we fight each other? We are brother. So and right after that, and after they have the coalition, and I think the Left Wing took over the power almost like in very betrayal way, that like my father, who totally believed that, okay, well, our country is going to be okay now, peaceful, let's build our homeland. But then after they came in, and they just like disarmed all the Royal Army, and then the next thing they know, they end up in the Seminole camp and being executed.
Or re-education camp.
Or re-education camp, as we know in the West.
Yeah, seminar is the Lao call re-education camp, seminar. because it was considered to be a seminar, as we know in the French term. And but as Tavi's father said a long time ago to Tavi, you know, re-education camp for him meant prison.
My guests are Ellen Kuras, who's made a film called Nerakun, with in collaboration with Tavi Suk Prasavat, who is a Laotian emigre to the United States. And the film will be shown at the BAM as part of the Sunshine Institute Festival on June 9th. And we will... well, I have another question. How did you escape?
In 1977, 2 years after the revolution, I think my family had went to a very, very dark period. Right after the Communist Party Lao took over the country in 1975, and they took my father away, and we thought he were executed. And because most of the people who've been taken away at that time, they all either been executed or disappeared forever. And then after that, you know, my family were blacklisted by the new government. They could never come to trust us as a normal citizen because they always label us as part of the tool of the American. And even though growing up, I didn't know much about what my father had done in the past, whoever he worked with, I know that he's a soldier. And I'm a son of the soldier. That's all I know of. But I didn't know what my father exactly done during the war. So, but the government know, the Communist Party Lao know his past. So that's why we went through a lot of experience of without knowing why. At very young age, I had to be put into police custody for an interrogation.
You were interrogated at how old?
I was like 12 and a half years old.
Being where are the secret plans?
To asking all of this political question that I couldn't answer, like, what did your father do? You know, who is his friend and associate? Like, you know, Mr. So-and-so, I know nothing. I hardly even know my dad.
So is the Pathet Lao still in power? Although you suggested earlier there is a power struggle. I'm assuming it's different wings of the Pathet Lao.
I think Pathet Lao in general is no such a wing. I think they're still the people who run the country now. From what I know, a lot of, you know, behind the curtain, there's still a lot of people still disappearing. You know, you still cannot speak freely, still don't have fully human right in that land. So I hope something changed in the future.
But, you know, we hear a lot about Vietnam, which has moved interestingly into some kind of a modified capitalist system following the Chinese lead. We hear about Cambodia. We hear about Burma, which has kind of closed itself off from the rest of the world, but we still hear about Burma. We don't hear anything about Laos. Why is that? What's going on there? How is the country sustaining itself? Does it have any kind of industry? Does it have, what is the economy based on?
Well, Laos has been largely an agricultural community, agriculturally based country.
So it's just self-sustaining?
Yeah, well, no, not really. I actually heard that they were thinking about joining a whaling commission, even though Laos is a landlocked country.
Well, that's something we'll be talking about in the second segment of this Underreported. So, and we'll get into why Laos might want to do that. But still, I doubt that it has anything to do with whaling. Is Laos engaged in trade with its neighbors?
You know, Laos has always been a very quiet, kind of sleepy country that is never really been on the forefront of the news, which is why it was very surprising in the 50s when it came onto the news during the Cold War. And this is one of the reasons why I was interested in making this film, was because the Lao voice hasn't been heard. And
well, how did you even come to think about the Lao voice not being heard?
Because when I was at school at Brown University, I lived in a neighborhood where there were a lot of newly grounded immigrants. So the Hmong were coming in, the Cambodians were coming in, and the Lowland Lao were coming in to work in Providence, Rhode Island. And I got to know a lot of these people in the neighborhood, and I started to take photographs of them. And so I came to know what their story was and to understand that they basically were here and nobody knew why they were here.
Although the immigrant situation has gotten tougher recently, hasn't it? The Associated Press reported that Hmong refugees are living in limbo in Thailand. They're classified as illegal immigrants there, and whereas in the past they might have been welcomed in the United States, after 9/11 the immigration laws changed and they can't come here either. And I don't know whether that your group, your ethnic group, faces the same problems, but I assume that it does.
I can only track back to back in the 80s when I was in refugee camp in Thailand.
How did you get out of it?
At a time, even though, you know, there's a lot of country who went there, so we sort of having a choice that, you know, which country that we want to go, like France, England, United States, Canada, Australia, and many places. But even though they are open up to the refugee, but still you have to go to a very serious process of interview. Like, you have to prove yourself, like, who you are. Are you real Laotian? Are you really running away from persecution? Or you just want to become, you know, a refugee so you can advance yourself in financial world? In my situation and my family situation is that when we were in the refugee camp, even though we choose to come to America because my mom told me that, well, we have to go to America because your father probably worked for them. And then, so we came to America, and even though it's not just easily like, okay, you can come to my country, we have to go through a serious process of interview, like, to prove that, you know, who am I? Am I related to my father? How many brother and sister do I have? And I have to remember every single one of them, date of birth. So I failed, my family failed the first interview. So on the second interview, I have to come up with a number system that I can, you know, like, can remember. Like, I have 10 brother and sister.
That's a lot of dates to
and,
remember.
Yeah, and I have to come up with the day. I start with two. Oh, no, I mean, the day I start with the, two. And also the month, I also start with one, you know, like January 2nd. February, whatever.
Like, basically, what happened, you know, was that Tavi, in Laos, a lot of people don't know when their birthday was or is. And so Tavi had to make up the birthdays of all of his family members. So he was basically making up this number system to be able to remember it all.
Now, the implication at immigration is that you want to come here because this is the land of opportunity. It's really great. But at one point in the film, both you and your mother say about life in the United States, if I knew it would be like this, I wouldn't have come. So it was tough after you got through all of this?
It's like when we were in a refugee camp and we usually hear a rumor here and there. We didn't hear much about America as a land of opportunity, but we hear a lot about America is a place where you can have fun and probably have a better living than many other country in the world. For us, you know, we can't really think about opportunity because we straight out from refugee camp, we have no occupation, we don't speak the language, so we don't really have much high hope about opportunity to be, you know, we just want to be in a country where we are accepted politically. Because during the time when we were in the refugee camp in Thailand, we've been treated worse than a dog. And we've been, like, for example, like the first time when my family were being reported ourselves to Thai authority, they put us in these two little rooms with 52 people. All my family and other refugee, Laotian refugee who also came at the same time. On the top of that, in the same next to jail cell where we were staying for 20 days, there was like 52 other prostitutes were in the same room. And there would have been rapings and all lots of activities going on. I remember that my mom and I had to close my little brother and sister's eyes not to see and not to hear what's going on. High.
Tav, talk about what happened when you came to the States and your sponsor and what the sponsor is supposed to do and what happened with you with your sponsor.
And on the top of that, after we've been through hell and thought like we're going to be in heaven by the time we get to Brooklyn, New York, And there's another, you know, we run away from a tiger, and now we meet the lion, who's just going to eat us alive. So anyway, as soon as we got to the United States, we didn't realize that we were being ripped off by our own sponsor, who sponsored our family to come to the state. And so I came to the Church World Service in and were run by the group of other Asian minority here in America.
But what happened, you know, with Church World Service, how they pay a sponsor in order to represent your, in order to resettle the family.
And obviously somebody was saw this as a money-making opportunity and not as a chance to help people in serious need.
Exactly. And I mean, that's not the case with everybody, but...
But it happened, and not just to you, I'm sure. Yes. A number of your brothers got involved with gangs and the like. There's all sorts of other complicated things which people will learn when they see the film. Yes. But I wonder, there's a reunion in the film with your sister. Was that in Thailand?
I think after, through this film, I think, you know, I had to backtrack a little bit. Through participating and corroborating, working with Ellen Kuras in this film, and then a lot of things that inspire me, you know, like by... anticipate to be part of this filmmaking. That's why we're going back to Laos to search more of my own histories and want to know more about what's going on. So, of course, we went back to Laos. And
are you able to get back in, even though they knew who you were?
We have to wait for over 17 years to get a permission. You know, I think after 17 years living in exile, finally we got a visa. Were granted to us to return to Laos, you know, to visit my grandmother and two of my sister, who my mom left behind during the time when she had to escape. So the person who I hugged at the end of the movie, that was my sister, and another old lady with the very short hair, is onto my grandmother, who I have learned so much about life and the great philosophy about what Laotian have to give from her.
And what you captured on film is a gorgeous country. I mean, it's sad that it's gone through this terrible history, but it looks like at one point or another it was close to paradise.
It's very true what Tavi says about the country. It's a very beautiful, beautiful country. But underneath the surface, you know, we feel what's happened to the people who have survived and who've come here. And that's kind of what I wanted to do in terms of the cinematography of the film, myself being a cinematographer who now does major motion pictures. I wanted to bring out the visual metaphor of the images, to be able to tell the story as well, and not only to be beautiful, but also to be able to have meaning, you know.
Well, one of the miracles seems to be that the family has been able to reunite in one way or another. Your father found you, that it must have been almost like a needle in a haystack at one point, but he found you here when he got to the United States. There are many families, I'm sure, that have never been able to get together again, and quite a few who lost a lot of family members.
Well, that's happening all over the world today when you think about the war that's happening all over the world today and how people are without their land. They're not in their homeland, and they lose a sense of their identity and their value system, and that's what's happening today in the States when we see the new immigrants coming into the country.
So what is your primary language these days, Tavi? Is English the language that you sleep, that you dream in and write in?
I still bilingual, and, well, probably more than bilingual, trilingual. I still, every day is in my life, and I'm at home with my children, my child, and my wife, we speak Laos. And then when we're out in public, we still speak English. And I think, you know, using a mother tongue by speaking my own language is to keep my homeland closer to my heart every day. And I'm going to pursue teaching my daughter to speak Laos, because I think it's very important to know where we came from. And I remember before I participating, or even before I met Ellen when I first came to the state, I was ready to throw all of those out into a garbage can, because when I'm facing the racial experience here in Brooklyn, New York, when people asking me like, "Who are you? Why are you here?" And you know, and it's like sort of like, you know, like being rejected because I'm look different. I don't look like normal American here. I'm a newcomer, and I thought to myself, maybe the best way to living well here in this country is to camouflage myself and disappear into a greater society, being part of this big melting pot. But when I get in there, I realize that America is not big melting pot, it's a big stir fry. So I have to find a way to pull myself out from there. And thank God for Ellen Kuras, who really reminded me, Tavi, that's very important to know where you came from.
We have to leave it there. Thank you both so much for being with us, Tavi Suk Prasavat and also Ellen Kuras. They collaborated on a film called Narakoon, which will be shown at the Sundance Institute Festival at the Brooklyn Academy of Music on Saturday, June 9th at noon. Thank you both
so much
for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.